Hi, it's Dave. I've been curious what Gally from HyperChange was thinking about Tesla's inclusion in the S&P 500 and wanted to chat about Tesla's plans for 2021. Gally's HyperChange YouTube channel focuses on investing in Tesla and other innovative companies. I'll add a link in the video description. Anyways, I called up Gally and what follows is our conversation. I hope it's helpful. All right, I'm here joined by Galileo Russell from HyperChange. Hi, Gally, how are you doing?
What's up, Dave? Great to see you.
Hey, yeah. So I wanted to hit you up and most of all, I just wanted to celebrate the moment for a bit.
Yeah, totally epic moment. Congrats to all the Tesla longs out there.
Yeah, I mean, were you kind of surprised by the announcement at all?
I was surprised because it felt like there was a lot of buildup into this S&P inclusion and then it didn't happen. And so then I kind of put it on the back burner. And I've also kind of been one of the people who's not that, like, I'm more focused on the fundamentals. I was in the camp of like not getting overexcited, not waiting for this. But I feel like the Tesla community is like so pumped.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I kind of had mixed emotions. Like, first of all, I'm like, hey, it's just the S&P 500. It's just an index. It doesn't change the fundamentals of Tesla. And so I was kind of like, you know, okay. But then on the flip side, I started to get excited about it because I started to realize like the bigger story of Tesla as this underdog, as this discounted, just like company that's been pounded on and accused and just trodden upon. And against all odds, finally in 2020, like things are working out, you know, they're ramping their production, they're becoming profitable. And then there was this reluctance on the S&P 500 committee to really, you know, include Tesla. And finally, they have to give in, you know, finally, it's like Tesla is like recognized by even the S&P 500 as perhaps one of the most important companies and one of the most valuable companies in the world. And so to me, it's like a perception change. It's like a shift, you know, in terms of the attitude. And we've seen this all throughout this past year, you know, how people have changed their minds about this company. But it's just fascinating. And for you and for other long-term shareholders, we've seen this like progression or this, we've seen this journey of Tesla being beat up, you know, finding some inner strength, you know, inner creativity and ingenuity to overcome their challenges. And I'm just like, I'm actually kind of stoked actually about what's going on.
Yeah, it feels like that was like the last Wall Street kind of like, you know, legacy thing to crumble that people were waiting on. And now that shoe's dropped, it's like officially Tesla's kind of like a big tech, you know, blue chip at this point, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine like back even a couple years ago that Tesla would be not just in the S&P 500, but would be, you know, $450 billion whatever market cap company. And that people would start to understand, you know, how profound the changes in Tesla, you know, can be for the world.
Yeah, totally. And it's crazy how radical the juxtaposition of the narrative switching from like, it's like night and day. There was no in between, you know, it's either like Tesla's about to go bankrupt or they're going to take over the world. And that's the narrative that flipped and we got a 10X in the flip. And yeah, so it seems like I'm almost a little bit skeptical because I'm like, I feel like that pendulum could swing back. But
yeah, I totally get you. Like for me, it's like, the stock price, the valuation, it's so like, dependent on so many things, you know, like you have sentiment, you have the different types of multiples and things that investors are giving, you have the macro environments, you have so many factors. I think a lot of people, they look at the stock price as like this fixed, like solid thing, you know, and it's the objective reality, but the reality is, things are shifting very fast and who knows what it's going to be, you know, in 1 month or 3 months or 6 months or 12 months. But yeah, I like that kind of like detached attitude in a bit to say, hey, the bigger picture is this longer story of Tesla, not just the stock price. I think, I don't know, do you feel like there's, what's your take on kind of the fixation with Tesla stock price, you know, and the whole kind of excitement around it? Are you, do you have mixed feelings or, you know, what's your take on this stuff?
Yeah, I feel like it's the Peter Lynch saying that there's a company behind every stock is really the huge thing of like, people get too hyped up in it because the stock price has gone up so much that it becomes a thing of focus. But if you're going to get so hyped when the stock goes up 5%, you have to get equally as, you know, sad when it goes down 5%. And so I think I don't like to get too hyped on that. I really like to focus on the fundamentals. And so that's why personally I've like, okay, this whole S&P 500 news, like it's great the institutions are forced to buy, but it just changes nothing about Tesla. Like in my head, this was an inevitability of once Tesla got big enough, they would be let into the S&P 500, like whether it's 2020 or 2025, like, you know, I don't really care. It's not going to change FSD's development. It's not going to change the production run rate. So it's just kind of like, I don't know. I think people get too hyped about it and care. And I personally think the mania and euphoria around Tesla stock has been just because of the meteoric rise. And there's a lot of people who are in it just because it's like the it stock of the moment. So, you know, that'll probably come back at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of remind some people that like sometimes the stock price takes it, it goes through some lulls, you know, some periods of adjustment where people have to get used to it. There's sometimes it gets range bound. And yeah, and it's a tough thing to forecast that. I mean, yeah, if I could forecast that, I'd be like a short-term trader, but I'm not really. yeah, I'm curious, like when you look out in terms of Tesla, if you're, I mean, I guess S&P 500, I mean, you know, I think props to you if you kind of can see beyond, you know, obviously, you know, the near term right now. What's exciting you about Tesla's next year? What's like, if you look at 2021, you know, and you're like, okay, is there anything that's super exciting? What's the number one kind of thing that gets you very excited?
I think there's two things. So the value of Tesla, and this is, I'm stealing this from Elon Musk, is the value of all the cars we produce times the value of autonomy per car, you know? And so those are the two lenses I'm thinking about what's happening with production, how many cars we're going to produce. I think we're going to double to 1 million, which is insane. But I think China's going to step up and do like 500K. And we're basically going to do 1 million deliveries next year, which is going to be massive growth, times the fact that autonomy, they just raised it to 10K, FSD beta is coming out. And so we have 1 million cars and FSD kind of converging at this one moment. And so I see a doubling of the vehicle output, as well as like probably a doubling or even like quintupling of the value per vehicle of FSD as you go from navigate on autopilot to truly FSD beta. So when I think about the intrinsic value of Tesla as a business, how much of this is priced in, frankly, a good amount, but there's a huge step function up in the intrinsic value next year as that capacity doubles and like each unit of output quintuples in value. You know, that's almost a 10x in intrinsic cash flow power right there. So I think that's huge. And that's kind of what the new news about China was probably the biggest thing that changed like my view recently, was that them saying like, we're going to do 500K cars plus in China, which I think they will next year. So I was like, wow, this is happening.
Yeah, it's like crazy how much good news is coming out of China, you know? It's like just one thing after another. They whip out the factory in like 10 or 11 months. They whip out the first Model 3, and now they're ramping, sending cars to Europe. You know, what, October was supposed to be 22,000 Model 3s, you know, Model Y by the end of the year, you know, ramping up production next year. It's like almost like it's just good news after good news. You know? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Yeah. I'm curious, what's your take on the 4680 battery cells? Like, can you, like, I remember you're saying how you got a look at battery day at the production lines, you know? So like, what can you tell us about it? Like, did it look like they were actually like really making the cells? Like, was it kind of like more testing stages? Like, what was your gauge on it?
I mean, it looks like they're definitely on some sort of commercial ramp or close to it with that first line of like 10 gigawatt hours. Like that actually, it's not really like a test almost. It's like a true production line. But the production line being set up is different than like optimizing it and getting something good coming out of the other end. So I think that's where they're at right now, is like just running everything through the production line, optimizing the machines, and then eventually optimizing the yield for that final product and cell. And I've been curious of like, okay, well, I thought the Plaid Model S was going to have it, and that's delayed a year. And I've also been trying to think a lot about that 100 gigawatt hour in 2022 number, because I don't know, this is what I'm thinking of would be my first question of like my say question next quarter. I'm thinking of one to submit that's about basically where they're at with the production of those cells, because that's like what I'm most curious about as Tesla investors. Like, I think this is a game-changing new technology. This is the foundation of all our new products, is this 4680 cell to structure technology. And so you know, where is that on the path to commercializing? When is the first unit with that 4680 get sold to a customer? How fast is that? Do we scale the production of that 4680? That's like where I'm laser focused now. And to be honest, I think Tesla's been super quiet about it. And the biggest number we have is this 100 gigawatt hour in 2022 number, which is a run rate, in my opinion. So that won't be achieved. And so now I'm like, okay, wait, there's no cars with it right now, but then we're going to be at a run rate of 100 gigawatt hours, which is enough for like a million EVs a year within 18 months. And so how do we get from this zero to a million EVs a year with just the new cell in 18 months? Like, it just seems too good to be true. And so that's where I'm focusing a lot of my thought and research on the Tesla thesis right now is you know, how that gap.
Yeah, like what I'm kind of curious about is like, so we have Giga Berlin coming up with the Model Y. And so, you know, rumors have it, they're building pretty fast right now. So, you know, if they hire people February, March or so, maybe they start production, who knows, second quarter of next year. It's like, are they going to have batteries? Like, where are these 4680 cells going to come from? Are they going to be shipped from Fremont, you think, the first production, kind of the line that, yeah, you know, they have? And then will they kind of just slowly ramp the Model Y as they kind of build up battery production in Berlin? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And I had the limiting factor on, and he was, we talked about this, and he was saying it's like a flywheel, like they'll use it to kind of spin up new production. And so they'll use that Fremont capacity to help spin up the Berlin, like basically give batteries for those cars coming off the line at Berlin while they build out the battery production in Berlin. And then once they get there, then hopefully that Berlin situation will be set up, and then they can start, you know, sending more cells to Austin to augment that out of Fremont.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It just seems like, I agree with you. It seems like at some point, Tesla is expecting some massive ramp of 4680 cells, you know, because like,
totally,
it's like, you're not going to build an entire Berlin factory focused on Model Y initially without having the cells, you know, like in your planning process. And Fremont's not going to be able to, you know, the production line there isn't, or the battery line isn't going to be able to supply everything, you know? And then you have Austin also coming online next year and focus on the Model Y a bit with Cybertruck. It seemed like Elon kind of downplayed a bit of Cybertruck's availability for next year at the last conference call. I don't know if you caught that, but it seemed like he was saying they'll try to get some out, but he didn't really seem like they're going to, you know, release a ton.
It sounded very small batch.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm guessing like Model Y will be more of the focus of Austin initially. But it seems like you're not going to be able to produce a ton of Model Ys unless you have a ton of batteries, you know, and they're all 4680 cells. So it's like something's going on. I totally agree with you, though.
And there's something interesting of like, they said the 4680 will go into the car in Berlin. And so then the question is, well, what are the specs? Because I have a Model Y right now at the 2170 cell that gets 320 miles of range. So there's got to be a totally different spec profile of this new Model Y. And that's the kind of thing that they're downplaying, is they won't really talk about it, because part of me thinks that's like a 400 mile Model Y, and they don't want to just say that they're, you know.
Yeah.
And they might only have that available in Berlin to start, which would be kind of weird, but it seems like that's how it's going to shake out.
Yeah, no, it has to be something better. It's not going to be, you know, be worse. It's probably going to be better range, probably better performance. I mean, my question would be, maybe they could charge a bit higher price for the higher range, you know, so that, let's say, the US folks who don't have access to a 400 mile Model Y will be okay with it, because it costs more over there, you know, initially, at least, until Austin starts to get in production. Then they can lower the price, you know, up the range and performance, et cetera. It's fascinating stuff. I mean, next year in some ways is going to be a crazy year for Tesla, and they have some huge challenges, because I think one of the biggest risks, I was going to ask you what you think one of the biggest risks are, but one of the things I'm seeing is like, they have a lot of timing challenges right now with lining up the factories, the workers, the production, the ramp with the 4680 cells to be able to kind of match everything and ramp in a good way. Mm-hmm. You know, what if like, you know, the 4680 cells are like 6 to 12 months late, you know, and you have Austin and Berlin kind of just not producing much for like a year or something, you know? It's like, that's not the best situation for Tesla. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of like the kind of price for perfection, theory. I think that's a lot of what's happening to Tesla now, and that like before when it was assumed they would miss every deadline, now it's assumed that they'll hit every deadline kind of for granted. And so I think they're because yeah, like I thought the Plaid Model S was going to be out by now, but it sounds like there's already a delay. So I feel like it's and it's such a big step to commercialize this such a new technology that it's going to be very like it's going to be way harder to scale the Cybertruck and Berlin Model Y than Fremont Model Y was. And I, and that's what we're all comping it to was like Shanghai Model 3 and Y and Model Y at Fremont, but that was just replicating a new production line we'd already perfected. So when you go to Austin or Berlin with this new 4680, it's a totally new production process that we haven't perfected. And so that's why I think the speed of that ramp goes way slower. And Elon knows that. And that's like what you're saying when he talks about the Cybertruck. They're not even, they're trying to downplay that because they know there's going to be like some roadblock.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cybertruck, you're talking about completely different manufacturing techniques too, They've got to get all this like folding and, production. I'm sure like it's going to be a ton of work. Yeah, I'm curious, like, I want to talk about CapEx a bit because I saw your video on CapEx and it got me to have some thoughts here. So Tesla is forecasting, let's say 2021, $4.5 billion to $6 billion in CapEx expenditures. And in 2022, $4.5 billion to $6 billion. This past year, it was what, about $3.5 billion or so, $3 billion or so, around there, I think. So they're boosting their CapEx, but on the flip side, they have a ton of expenditure. So they're building Austin factory, putting it online, ramping it. They're building Berlin factory, ramping it. They're expanding Shanghai still, and then they're coming out with a whole flood of 4680 production lines, to build these batteries. And so when you look at that, it's like the amount that they're doing for the cost is actually pretty incredible. It's like how do you like ramp three factories and multiple battery lines for $4.5 to $6 billion, which they're saying in their 10K that they can cover that with just cash flow from their operations. They don't even need to touch their bank account, right? $14 billion. So they could, with $1.5 billion or so free cash flow, they can just put that into CapEx. And so I'm thinking like, wow, this is pretty crazy that Tesla doesn't even need to spend additional money for their growth. They could just fund their growth with their existing, cash flow from operations. I mean, what are your thoughts with all this?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they were probably adding like they're gonna add 1 million cars of capacity next year with let's call it 5 billion or 6 billion in CapEx. Like, you know what I mean? It took them 4 billion in CapEx to get to the Model 3 ramp of like 150,000 cars a year. So it's like a 7 to 8x per unit improvement in CapEx efficiency. Like the amount of CapEx per unit of output just seems like such a big improvement. And there's a lot of things going on with that number, right? Because you had an over like really inefficient spend with Model 3 because if this whole conveyor belt automated system didn't work, they had to build the tent. So that kind of like mess up inflates the CapEx, and then the whole time Tesla's getting way, way better at it. And so even though they're like the CapEx is going up a little, there's like so much at work at play, right? But they're per like car essentially, the CapEx is going down so dramatically. And then I think if you layer in the battery production as well and say, wait, not only are they doing all of that, but they're also going even more vertical, which you would assume has an even higher CapEx, like, adding that all up, it's almost a 10x improvement in 2 to 3 years of CapEx efficiency per vehicle, which is like, it boggles the mind. And so that's like why I think the Wall Street's kind of freaking out. It's because it's like, wait, like, this isn't as crappy and capital intensive as a business as we thought. All our like Wall Street models and spreadsheets are changing because we thought you were going to be like GM and not be able to improve your CapEx spending. And so even as nerdy and weird as that is, like I think the CapEx efficiency is underlying a lot of the financial equation of the DCF that causes like Wall Street to kind of get the story.
Yeah, it's interesting because if Tesla is spending less CapEx, let's say per vehicle, that allows them to first, it allows them to have more margin on the vehicle because, less expenditures. And so they can lower the cost of the vehicle over time. And then it allows them to scale faster because then they can build more factories quicker and ramp their production. So it changes the game, you know, for Tesla. And it's like, I don't know how many people completely understand that Tesla is in a completely different place where they're self-funding their future in a sense, you know, and they
Totally.
become super lean. Like, this is what I've been kind of talking about since like a few years back, is like their operating expenditure kind of core of their company is actually super lean. Like, they haven't grown that much over time, their R&D and, you know, SG&A lines. And for the growth that Tesla has seen, but for them not to grow their operating expenditures that much is pretty actually remarkable. I think a lot of it goes back to this like disciplined kind of resiliency of the 2017, 2018 period, where Elon's like, profit, you know, we've got to make it without raising money or we die, you know, just kind of this crazy goal. And something about that set Tesla up where they're just like a super lean machine right now, you know, like in terms of operating structure. And so they're doing that. They have lean operating core, and then they have this super efficient CapEx spend that's going to lower eventually the cost of the vehicle and help them scale. And all of this is just like letting them have more free cash flow, more profit, investing back into the business. And yeah, it's insane.
And that's why you're seeing them getting like gutsier with the spend, because we're like, okay, well, they can fund all of the CapEx to like quintuple production with cash flow internally. Like, what else are we going to spend money on? They're looking at the supply, how the supply chain breaks at like 5 million units. That's why they have the clay production. That's why they're doing the cathode production. And so there's a lot. That's what I like to think of. Like, okay, well, if I'm in Tesla's boardroom right now, like, how am I starting to think about how to deploy this capital? Yeah, you want to keep a cushion, but at some point it keeps piling up so much. And especially if we start to use, securitize the factories we're building and get like debt based on that factory, like they did in Shanghai. So we didn't really need to put up the money for it. And so the CapEx, like sort of cash friction, will decrease even more. So then I'm like, okay, well, is Tesla going to start like buying a power plant or like setting up virtual power plants? Like, there's kind of a, you can go down the list of things that were far too capital intensive to even remotely begin. But now if Tesla has $3 billion on its balance sheet that literally they don't know what to do with, that's earning no interest. Like, there's a lot of like crazy weird sort of stuff they get into, or that's kind of what I'm hoping. Like now that we have all this capital, like what do you do with it? How do we maximize this? Because Tesla's done so much with so little in the past. Like, do we use this as a subsidy to reduce the upfront cost to get everyone to get a solar roof? Do we there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of potential. Like, I'm curious what you think. Like,
Yeah,
if
like
you're Elon Musk right now, in that boardroom with Zach, and you're like, okay, well, what are we gonna spend,
yeah, I mean, like, that's the challenge. Like, I was gonna ask you about this. Like, they have over 14 billion in the bank, but it's not like they really need that money, especially with their efficient CapEx spend. I mean, they might need that in case, you know, something, you know, comes up. It's good to have that cushion in case of who knows what macro changes, if they need to shut down the factory, who knows what. But besides that, like, and that's just right now. Imagine a few years down the road, you know, with 1 million, 2 million vehicles, and imagine the cash they're generating at that time. It's like the cash kind of generating potential of Tesla is like, I think it's still like in the early innings of being realized from people, you know, like they're still trying to grasp, because Tesla's been like a cash bleeding, you know, enterprise for so long up until the Model 3 ramp. And so for people to like see this just change right before their eyes, it's like it's going to take a while, I think, for people to grasp it. And I think they're going to have to just see some of that like cash generation happen. But yeah, my question though is like, if I'm Elon, I'm thinking differently than everyone else is thinking, you know, like that's why, you know, Tesla is where they're at. And he's basically saying, okay, what is kind of on a first principle level, what is the point of Tesla? What is our focus, and what's going to move the needle to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy, right? And so in that type of construct, it's like, yeah, you've got to first, I think, make sure your autonomous driving is just like crazy, like has all the people they need, all the funding. Like, you basically talk to Andrej Karpathy and say, anything you want, you know, we're gonna get you. You know, that's the first thing, you know, blank check to Andrej, right? Autonomous. Yeah, that's the second thing is, I think this whole battery thing is crucial. And I kind of had this thing back like in 2013 or 2014, I had this hypothesis that if Tesla would make it into like the world's largest automaker by 2025-ish or 2030, sometime between that period, that they would use the money that they're generating, the cash they're generating, to massively invest in battery technology, like totally dominate that area where they can maybe have a true battery breakthrough, like something that's not just step changes in efficiency, but completely something that people can't compete with. And I think this battery day, the 4680 cell, it's like the first step of that. Meaning like, mm-hmm. to me, it's like, it's not something that every single battery automaker should just give up and not even try to compete. You know, it's something that it's aspirational for other, you know, companies, and Tesla put themselves in the lead, but it's not like game over for people, right? I think there's still an opportunity for Tesla to have their kind of game over moment sometime in the future. I don't know what the time frame is, but I think what Elon does is he says, okay, we're doubling down on this battery technology, on development, and we're going to hire the best minds, and we're going to do it under the cover because no one really, you know, needs to be all hyped about it. And we're going to basically, you know, take it to the next level. You think that the battery day was like the top, you know, level of the next 3 years, but Elon is thinking like, okay, that's yesterday. Battery day was yesterday. I'm doing the next 5 or 10 year kind of big investment. And the challenge though is I don't know how much of that really needs a bunch of cash though, you know, but versus how much of it is like the people, the strategy, et cetera. And so, yeah, that's kind of my question. Like sometimes when you have a lot of cash, you're tempted to get into areas that you don't really need to get into, or it just becomes like it diverts your focus, you know? And so the thing is what I love about Tesla and Elon is Elon's the type of person that I could trust making the right decision because he's looking at it from a different perspective than just trying to be reactionary. We're just trying to follow what like everyone's talking about. Like I'm glad that Elon doesn't look at everyone's Twitter things on Tesla Twitter feeds and tries to make a decision what to do for Tesla. You know, he has a completely different, you know, framework of thinking. And that's where I'm like, hey, that's where I, you know, want to bet my money on, you know, on him.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. Like, another thought I had was like in our generation, like Elon, I know doesn't consider himself an investor, but I kind of look at Elon as like, that's gotta be part of the role where you have all this cash that you're generating and you need to put it somewhere, you know? And who else in business in this world, kind of in terms of companies and investable public stocks, who else would you trust to make good investments with billions of dollars of money, right? It's like, like Elon's gotta be one of the best of the best of all time in terms of how to allocate money for not just like mediocre returns, but for like super crazy returns and for like mission changing, like earth changing, you know, results too. And so I think like the combination of that too is like, is really fascinating to me.
Yeah. And it's like, he is a capital allocator and investor in some way of like investing in Pete Bannon and his team, investing in Andre Karpathy and this team, like, these are the Gigafactory, like these are all very calculated, you know, investments that Tesla makes. And that's why I keep scratching my head of like, well, what does Tesla do next? Because it seems like they have too much money. Like when I got to ask Elon about electric planes, it's like, okay, well, there just aren't enough good engineers. It's not even a money thing. And so I think that's the same of anything. It's literally just like a green light to hire all the best engineers, but at some, money's not the limit on how fast they're scaling at this point. And I don't think it has been for like a year. And so, that is, but I have to think there's some part of Tesla and Elon that are like, wait, now if we have like, I don't know, all these possibilities start coming up once you have this much on your balance sheet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you could think about acquisitions, you know, some key
Albemarle. I just put out a video today about Tesla mining, and we're joking about how they could buy Albemarle because it's only a $12 billion company. So Tesla's gotten so big that it's like they could just write a check and buy the biggest lithium mine in the world overnight. Like, so I'm wondering if there's a really weird, crazy move like that in the works of Tesla buys a $4 billion lithium asset from Albemarle. Like just a crazy, you know, like big financial move.
Yeah.
I
mean, Tesla could also raise money too, like that, you know, like $10 billion just to do something extra as well.
Well, yeah, they wouldn't even have to use their cash on their balance sheet to buy Albemarle. They could raise debt at zero interest rate and then just pay off that debt and literally not even use any cash and buy the world's largest lithium producer. So now they've gotten so big that they could buy GM with barely, you know what I mean? Like it's the so I don't know, like the power plant thing is one thing. Buying their own production essentially to start deploying fleets of robotaxis would take massive CapEx, but honestly, not even that much CapEx. So it's this weird inflection of Tesla needs so much money, they're burning so much money, they're like everyone's worried about that. To now the new thing is like, well, how do they even spend capital efficiently? Like,
Like some people think that Tesla will never give dividends, or it'll be like 15 or 20 years out. But I'm thinking kind of like, you know, it might not be a
could be
bad
like three
idea.
years.
It actually might not be a bad idea, like in the next 5 or 10 years, to start, you know, some type of. I would start with a very small dividend, just for the sake of like, you know, because Elon has. I mean, that's the thing. Elon is borrowing off of his shares, etc. You know, it's like, and he needs to fund Mars, and so I don't know. I'm a proponent of. As long as it doesn't detract from Tesla's growth plans, et cetera, starting a small dividend in 6 or 7 years, and allowing Elon to keep his shares, you know, in Tesla, and using that money to pay off his debt to fund Mars, et cetera. We'll see.
Yeah, totally. I think that would be epic.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would have thought that was crazy too, but just seeing how the financials have transformed, it's like, you know, how much them having one factory and needing to build five factories around the world, like how, and they're crushing it and they don't need to raise money to do that. It's like, I don't, what, how much more capital intensive can we get? Like, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk to you about a full self-driving beta. You know, you have all this like footage going around of people using it on city streets. And what's your take? Like, are you excited about it? When do you think this is going to roll out to full, you know, full rollout, wide rollout? And do you think like this will lead to robotaxi by end of 2021, at least in one locality? Or do you think we'll have to wait till like 2022?
I think end of 2021 on one locality seems close, but maybe a little bit longer. But I don't know. I'm really pumped. I'm excited as a Tesla customer to get the FSD and use it myself. Because, you know, I don't know. It's, you see the videos, you don't like, I just want to try it myself because I'm very curious how much of a step it is beyond navigate on autopilot. But I think it's a huge deal, like, consumer wise. And I think that's where the investing world is kind of like didn't get it, and Wall Street didn't get it, is like, well, now we have all these people whose cars are driving themselves, hundreds of them, soon thousands, like showing all their friends, taking videos, telling their friends, like, this is a movement that's not going away. This is gonna be like the coolest thing that anyone can talk about for the next year, is like, oh my God, like the Rona happened, we survived, and all of a sudden we have self-driving cars. Like, what? You know, like it's gonna look like it came out of nowhere. But I think this is, it's huge. It's the true, you know, software moment of Tesla's business model, of where the computer, the car becomes truly the computer on wheels, and then the Tesla App Store can launch, and then, like, you know, my theory is that trillions of dollars of market cap of companies get created as apps on the Tesla App Store, just like the Apple App Store created Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, you name it, TikTok, you know, how many Uber, Airbnb, and so I think, you know, it's kind of like everything that Tesla's done up until this point is a Trojan horse to just get FSD working. It's all about getting cars on the road, collecting the data, building the technology to have an autonomous car. Nothing matters. We're literally not going to make a cent as a company for 20 years until we come up with a self-driving car. Like, if you had told somebody that, they'd be like, what is this plan? You know? But that is exactly what's going to happen. And then they're going to flip the switch, like Elon says, and this becomes instantly, you know, to me, one of the handful of companies that run the world, that are the most important backbone of society in the 21st century, is going to be autonomous cars moving us around every single city, moving stuff around every single city. There's like $2 trillion problems right there. So, yeah, I don't know. It blows my mind to see how fast it's happening, because I feel like we all, I'm kind of going on a rant here, but I feel like we always had this thing in the back of our heads as Teslables of like, we're modeling this EV business, and then it's like we're modeling a hardware play. And maybe we're baking in 30% gross margins, a 10% operating margin, you know, structurally higher than auto companies, but it's still like this hardware play. And we're like, oh yeah, if Tesla hits autonomy, like, of course we're throwing out this spreadsheet and like they're gonna make trillions. You know, that's what everyone was saying. But now it's like, shit, like they actually kind of are doing this autonomy thing. And it's not a flip the switch. It's like incremental price hikes that are getting realized over time, baking into the gross margin. So I've been blown away of like, holy shit. Like I kind of like had in the back of my head, this was going to be this crazy business case study of watching Tesla be the most profitable company, grow. So kind of like breaking all the rules. And it actually is happening like even faster and better than I would have expected, if that makes sense. Like I'm always like, yeah, it's gonna be like 2025 before they get the self-driving cars. And now they're like, dude, the FSD beta is here. And like, I just drove to SF by myself for 95% of the way the car drove there. Like, this isn't, you know, it's really close.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, this is like, I'll rant as well, you know? I mean, I think when Elon at Autonomy Day was saying like, hey, our whole company is focused and based on, you know, or is supporting autonomy. Like there isn't, you know, like we're making a huge bet, you know, on our entire company. I don't think people like got it at that moment. And I don't think they'll completely mm-hmm. get it for quite a bit, but it's like the amount of like strategic priority and focus that Tesla's putting on autonomous driving. It's like, it's still like, you know, people are still starting to grasp that, you know? A couple days ago, I was watching this talk by Andrej Kaparthy a few years back called from his Train AI conference. But in this talk, in the later part of the talk, he talks about Tesla cars as robots. And he says, like, these robots, you know, we're putting, you know, software, they're, you know, driving around, et cetera. And I was like kind of thinking about that for like a day or two. And I was like, let's change the idea of a car. Let's, you know, X the idea of a car where it's a human driving the car, and let's change it to a robot where the robot now is driving you, right? And I was going to ask you one of my questions I was thinking about before the interview. I was like, hey, Gally, like, how's your Model Y treating you, right? Meaning, like, not how are you treating your Model Y car, but how is the Model Y robot, right, treating you, Gally, right, the human? It's like a complete different paradigm, you know, when the robot can actually completely drive you, right? It's like taking care of you in a sense, right? Taking you from point A to point B. It's a robot servicing the human. It's no longer a car using, or a human using the car as a tool anymore. It's a complete different paradigm shift. And then I'll rant a bit more too, because I love this stuff. I was talking to an AI guy expert a week or two ago, James Dalma, and he was saying that he thinks that Tesla can go into robotics and make like humanoids in the future, because once you start solving the whole, you know, navigation and visual type of optical, you know, guidance system that they're doing, you can transfer that to not just a car robot, then let's say a humanoid robot. And then one of the major challenges with robots is like the motors and stuff between all the joints and just all this stuff. And Tesla is working on motors. They have batteries for the robot. They have the software, the hardware for the robots. So it's like now you have Tesla as a robot maker who's making, you know, transportation robots, right, with autonomous driving. But what's going to stop them from making other types of robots, like service robots who, like, you know, do my household chores or, you know, do other stuff in the future? I mean, sure, this is like, you know, a ways out, you know, 5 or 10 years out, but it's definitely, I think, interesting to think about.
Yep. And I think it goes exactly in line with one of my big things of what's a huge Tesla product line people don't realize: the Tesla smart home. You know, I think they're getting into that, the solar roof. I want them to collect rainwater. Like, I don't know if that's a crazy idea, but the smart HVAC system, like, and then your robot in your home. Like, I think Tesla's getting all the way into this. And that's what I like. As an investor, it's like, how do you get the case study of Tesla? What's like the biggest lesson that I've learned from this? It's like, you're really betting on the technology, you know, and the value from that technology. And it used to take, you know, a quarter or two to be realized, the value of your business would show up in the financial statements. Now it's so high tech, it's so different. It could take 30 years for the value of a piece of technology to show up in a financial statement. Wall Street is still reading financial statements. And so that's like what I focus so much on Tesla is, like, it's all about the technology and the value they're building, and the most efficient battery in the world. This is the new propulsion system that is going to power everything. Like, literally go outside. Like, how much of the energy system is like based on this technology that's shittier than what I know Tesla could build if they tried? Like, everything. And so that's why when it just, you say cars today, but I'm like, okay, but in that car is the technology for the home. There's the Octavalve, which is the smart AC. There's, you know, the super efficient battery, which is going to store energy for my home. There's like, so I just think Tesla, and this is the way I think about SpaceX too, like SpaceX, what did they do with Starlink? It was the first time the reusable rocket technology, they monetized it with this second layer application of, okay, well, if we can do this super cheap, then we can shoot the satellite, you know, that financially makes sense. So I think Tesla is, as much as people can try and value them on cash flow and the financials today, it's like, dude, we are just so early of what the technology they're developing in, to me, the most advanced neural net in the world. Like, okay, Google's the leading AI company of the last 10 years. Who's the leading AI company in the next 10 years? It's Tesla, because they're going to get all the driving data. And to me, it's like, I was looking for my phone to do the analogy, but it's like this thing, this computer right here, this is our how all our computers are. They don't move. Like, they're, like, we get so much value out of this thing, but it's not even moving. Like, it's just a screen. Like, imagine if my computer was a bubble that I could get in that could take me everywhere. Like, now all of a sudden, to me, the computer, and it, like what you're saying, like, call it a computer, it's really just a robot, right? And so, like, yeah, is Tesla going to get into humanoids? Maybe, I don't know. But if I, the trajectory of, like, where AI is headed, where neural net development's headed, where that talent is, who can engineer robots, who can do the batteries for robots, like, I'm like, Tesla's checking, like, leading every single industry and innovation that would be needed to come up with the like ex machina robot. So yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but like I really try and take a step back when I look at this Tesla investment is if you had focused on the technology that they were building and like we're, and that's why my, where my conviction comes from is it's like, bro, like show me another EV that's going 300 miles. There isn't one. Ford, GM can't even put one out for 200 miles. Like if we're all going electric, this is kind of a no brainer, you know? So I don't know if that was a long rant, but I really, the value of Tesla, even today, there is so much that it's going to take 10 more years to get on that income statement.
Yeah. I mean, a great example, I think, is like the solar roof. It's like the solar roof is one of those products. It's like a tough product. It's not going to get you like billions of dollars of income, you know, right away, because it takes like all these iterations to really get it right and to grow this demand. It's a whole new product, you know, category, but it's like Elon and his team is so motivated because of the mission, not necessarily just to make money, you know, and that puts them into like certain areas that I think other companies just wouldn't do because it's too risky, you know. Like when I look at HVAC, it's like it's obvious that Tesla will do HVAC, not just because Elon is like talking about it and he has some designs, but because like HVAC uses a ton of energy, you know, like it's like people are turning on their, you know, AC systems all summer. Sometimes some people are using it like 24/7, you know, and it cools down the entire house. And people's electric bills are like, you know, $400 or $500 in some places. When you could just make a more efficient product, you know, you can make a product that cools each room down according to where the person is in the house, you know, uses a super, you know, more efficient, you know, cooling method and system, is quieter, is easier to use, and uses like, yeah, I could imagine Tesla's AC system could probably use at least like maybe 1/10 to 2/10. You know, of the energy of a typical AC system. And if you multiply that by hundreds of millions of people, let's say using air conditioning, like that's a huge amount of energy that Tesla is going to take out and knock out with their HVAC system. And that's kind of the I think the thinking that Elon has, where it's like, sure, it's not like, who knows how much money HVAC is going to make Tesla, but it makes sense, like mission-wise, you know, it's just a huge energy hog, super inefficient. No one is making the thing that that needs to be made, you know? So Elon says, yeah, hey, we're just going to do it, you know? Yeah, it's kind of fascinating to me that a company like and a person would like operate in a way that's just different than most companies, you know, and operate with such a strong mission, but yet they're able to produce such revolutionary and appealing, compelling products and services that make a ton of money too. It's like, yeah, incredible stuff.
Yeah. And I keep thinking about what they're doing in mining too. Like, and this similar thing of like everyone saying it's impossible, that's going to be way too hard. But then I'm like, dude, if somebody's going to figure out a new way to mine lithium out of clay with just some salt there, like that is Elon, like, you know? And so it's like a snowball that just has so much momentum that like there was a chance Wall Street was going to be able to stop when it wasn't cash flow positive. And, you know, Chainos and Einhorn, they're, you know, trying to crush Tesla, but it's like now we can't stop the snowball because like it's just all downhill from here. And, you know, So that's why it's like, on some level, it's like, I'm kind of bored with Tesla. It's like, I'm trying to move on to like the new like company. Cause like, this is just in the bag. Like, we paid Elon 300 mil. We still made 800 mil last quarter. And we're growing like 40% next quarter. Like, dude, like the game is over. Like, we already, like what you were saying earlier, it's like, it's game over. To me, it's already game over. It's just like, how much money are we going to make from FSD is the only question left. Like, is this a $15 trillion company at maturity or five with autonomy? That's like the, you know, it's like that. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, man. yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, it's kind of mind-blowing, like, yeah, the potential that Tesla has. Hey, I want to ask you about your fund, Hyperguap.
Yeah. So we couldn't talk about it last time.
Yeah, yeah, I know. So for those who don't know, you know, Galia's put out this fund, Hyperguap, to invest in, it's pretty much what, seed stage companies, correct?
I mean, it's, to be honest, it's no. I would say it's like from companies that are worth 500K to 50 bill.
Okay, so whatever.
Is my window.
Whatever, so, whatever fancies you.
Yeah, companies that are hyper-changing come in all shapes and sizes.
Okay, so no restrictions, just hyper-changing companies.
So I actually think that will be my greatest innovation is that I don't have a doctrine. Like, everyone always asks, like, what are you going, seed stage, series A? It's like, I'm going for, like, the dopest company I can find. Like, nothing else should matter. You know what I mean? Like, the highest ROI on my capital. Like, you know, like.
Sure. I get it. Like, yeah, trust me. So what is, how's it going? Like, are there some challenges? Like, you know, how far along are you in, you know, in terms of the process?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, the challenges is it's just a year's, like, the structure of how to structure this. Like, I've known I want to do something in VC for so long and startup investing. So how do I structure this legally? And I'm sort of in this new wild west of like being a YouTuber doing it. And so there's just a huge uphill learning curve about strategizing with my lawyers and now accepting everybody. And like, it just takes a really long time and I'm trying to do it the like bulletproof way. Cause that's just how you got to do it. And so it's been a learning curve. I feel like people are always like, oh, I'm getting my MBA, I'm doing this. I'm like, dude, I feel like I got like the dopest targeted MBA in the world for startup investing. It's called Try Starting Your Own VC Fund on YouTube. Like, you are going to learn so much if you do that. But I love it. And I've really been pumped about the conversations that I'm having with founders, where like the alternative to VC is so much more powerful, and like giving that like ray of hope to investors or like customers of these startups to invest in them. Like, I just think Hyperguap is like this new blueprint that, I don't know. I'm excited, but it's slow, you know, it's like one step at a time.
Yeah. No, I'm envious of you in terms of the learning that you're doing, you know, as you set up a fund. Like, I have a friend, I interviewed a week or two ago, Emmett Peppers, and he's starting his own fund as well. And he's like learning a ton, you know, just setting up everything up, you know, raising money, et cetera. But it seems like, you know, that type of learning is going to be just, you know, very valuable for the future. So I totally want to wish you all the best with this Hyperguap fund. You know, I hope you knock it out of the park. And yeah, it just is like awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully in like a year, I can come back and tell you about all the deals we've done, because I'm not allowed to talk about them.
Yeah, yeah.
Until it's postmortem. But sure. I think there's going to be some epic stories to tell, hopefully.
Awesome, man. Cool, man. Gally, nice catching up with you, man. I appreciate the time that you spend, and I appreciate just the thoughts that you have, and just, what you're up to.
Yeah, dude, great to catch up as always, Dave. Have a good one.
All right, take care. We'll see you, man. I'm glad I'm able to share a glimpse of some of the conversations I'm having with others. I'd love to hear who you'd like me to interview in the future. Who's the most thought-provoking thinker you've seen, heard, or read about? I love diving into deep and thoughtful topics that have a meaningful impact in our lives. And it doesn't have to be just about investing. Sometimes I think investing is looked at in such a narrow manner, but in order to see the future more accurately, I think it's helpful to have interests across many areas. If this video is helpful, consider liking the video and subscribing to my channel to keep updated. We're looking at investment topics in the world from different angles, trying to pry and get beneath the surface of things. All my YouTube videos are also available as an audio podcast. Just search for Dave Lee on Investing in your favorite podcast player. I'm also active on Twitter at HeyDave7. Thanks for all your support, and we'll see you in my next video. Thanks.